Welcome to Clarity Lab, where I talk to leading health and science experts to educate, inform, and dismantle misinformation. And if you are a human on this planet in 2025, you probably know what a problem misinformation is. I'm Derek Barris, and Clarity Lab is the official podcast of Cyrus Health, a 501c3 nonprofit I founded to build a free educational platform and curate social media channels that feature experts presenting health and science in a clear and compelling manner. And since we are a nonprofit, all your donations are tax deductible, which helps support our mission. Please visit cyrushealth.org to learn about what we're doing and what we plan to do in the future. And if you can support us, we would greatly appreciate it. Why do so many people think they can offer nutrition advice without having any training whatsoever? I've wondered about this question for decades, including when I went through my own wellness journey, which resulted in a 15-year battle with an eating disorder. If there's any one domain in wellness land that requires extreme skepticism, it's all of these claims about food toxicity and impurities and inflammation. Oh yeah, I get into the inflammation myth with today's guest, Danielle Shine. Danielle is an accredited dietitian based in Australia and a PhD candidate researching nutrition misinformation on social media. And like me, she ran in the very same wellness circles that I did in New York City only a few years later, so I never got to meet her in person. And like me, she suffered from disordered eating because she believed all the marketing rhetoric from wellness influencers. And that's what inspired her to go back to school to actually learn about nutrition. We also discuss the shortcomings of online certifications in nutrition, which are rampant, the buzzword inflammation, which is often weaponized by functional practitioners, even though, as Danielle says, diet is a lot more complex than that. Everyone's favorite, seed oils. And what she believes are the three greatest dangers to online nutrition misinformation. Danielle is fighting the good fight online, so I highly recommend following her, especially on Instagram. I've linked to her pages in the show notes, including her exceptional carousel on seed oils. I hope you enjoy this conversation. I certainly did. Danielle, you were just telling me that you trained to be a chef in New York City around 2015. But then you decided at some point to become a dietitian. What happened in that process to make you want to pursue this career?
Well, I spent a period of time, you could say, very deeply enmeshed in wellness. For a while there, in between, I spent 14 years as a media and communications professional. And towards the end of that career, I was very burnt out. I didn't even know how to cook for myself, really. And a lot of my job was rushing from here to there and dealing with crises in the media. So a lot of the time, I really didn't have a lot of time to eat. So a series of unfortunate events caused me to lose a lot of weight, and my health obviously suffered. So when you don't eat enough food, you can become very nutrient deficient. So I had a period of time where my health suffered. And I thought, I have to do something about this. I've got to figure out how to look after myself. I decided to become a chef because up until then, I used my kitchen cupboards as storage for shoes and clothes. I'm very embarrassed to say that. After becoming a chef, I started just writing blogs and picking up bits and pieces of work, so recipe developing for books and private chefing for people. And I became very deeply immersed in wellness. And through that journey, my disordered eating worsened for a while. I was exposed to self-proclaimed experts that were not qualified in nutrition, but at the time I didn't know. Repeated exposure to their information really deeply harmed my health. So things got a little bit bad, then a lot worse. And then I decided again, I think I'm not listening to the right people here. And so I decided to go back to university. It finally dawned on me that, you know, the best way to get a nutrition education is to actually go and educate myself through a credible university degree.
You had mentioned that when you were in culinary school, there was a layer of nutrition training involved as well, but in reflection, it probably wasn't the best training.
No, it wasn't. And I think because, again, there are a lot of education programs out there that people can enroll in online, and there are lots of schools, and I use that term schools very loosely, that are offering nutrition education that's not evidence-based. So I was exposed to a lot of non-evidence-based information. So things like only eat organic food, only choose non-GMO, only cook with coconut oil. So unfortunately, yes, I was exposed to quite a lot of non-evidence-based information, which for a while there really sent me down the wrong path.
In America, where you have spent time over a number of years, you can pretty much just call yourself a nutritionist with no training whatsoever. Some states are more strict than others. Registered dietitian here is a protected term, but many other similar terms are not. And that creates a lot of confusion for people who are just looking for sound nutrition advice. What are your thoughts on non-trained people who offer nutritional advice on social media?
I used to be one of those people. So I understand how easy it is to fall into the trap of following a particular diet or tweaking a recipe and thinking that it's absolutely fantastic because, oh, it makes me feel great. I don't have any bloating or whatever it may be. I can understand people's desire to share what they think they know. But unfortunately, I have learned the very hard way of first believing in nutrition misinformation and believing in wellness fads that eventually that's going to catch up with you. And a lot of people that feel like they've made changes and it's helped their health, it might actually not be the food or the dietary changes they've made. So a lot of people that are not educated to really understand food and its effects on health, whilst I appreciate their enthusiasm to share what they know and help people that follow them navigate food and health, it can actually be really harmful. As a registered dietitian, I spend a lot of time correcting misinformation shared by non-educated people. At the moment, social media is filled with most people sharing nutrition information that aren't appropriately educated to do so.
What do you see as the major dangers of that?
Well, there are many dangers to nutrition misinformation. And if I was to list them all, we would be here for hours. But it's easy to think about the dangers of nutrition misinformation in different categories. So there are physical dangers, there are mental health dangers, and there are also financial dangers, believe it or not. The baseline physical danger that anyone can face if they believe in nutrition misinformation and implement it is a nutrient deficiency or nutrient deficiencies. So anytime we remove a food, we remove a whole food group, anytime that we eat in excess of one food group compared to another, and this usually happens through trying a fad diet, we can actually throw off the balance of nutrients in our body. If we take away specific nutrients and we don't replace them, that can cause a deficiency. And again, if we eat foods in excess of a particular nutrient that we don't need a lot of, and I'm thinking at the moment in my mind about the carnivore diet. So a lot of carnivore dieters are eating high levels of saturated fat, which is a nutrient that we need. And we definitely need fat in our diet, but we don't need a lot of it. Then from there, when you look at in terms of the mental harms that can come from nutrition misinformation, things like food fear, shame, guilt, confusion, and anxiety about eating, nutrition misinformation can generate a lot of those negative emotions, and that can cause us to make dietary changes that actually aren't health supportive. For a lot of people that I see and work with, it actually ends up in disordered eating, which again can set us up for a nutrient deficiency or nutrient deficiencies. And for some people, it can actually result in a full-blown eating disorder, which increases your risk for malnutrition. Worst case scenario, nutrition misinformation can increase the risk of premature death. Sounds pretty serious. That is the case when it comes to adopting nutrition misinformation and faulty beliefs about food and its effects on health. In terms of financial harms, well, nutrition misinformation can drive people to spend a lot of money on non-evidence-based nutrition-related products. So things like unproven supplements that haven't been tested for safety or for efficacy. So there's a lot of supplements on the market these days that just aren't necessary. And just a quick little side note there, it's important that people understand that supplements are not risk-free. Taking a supplement can increase your risks of various interactions with other medications if you're on medication, and it can also create an imbalance of nutrients and affect your body in various ways. Back to financial harms, nutrition misinformation can drive people to waste money on things like direct-to-consumer testing, so things like food intolerance tests and microbiome tests that churn out a lot of data. But a lot of that data is quite meaningless. Science hasn't caught up to those things yet, and those industries aren't regulated. People might make a lot of dietary changes based on that data. And again, those dietary changes may not be health supportive.
As someone who suffered from an eating disorder, I know the dangers of falling into these online spaces. I was definitely a victim of that. You mentioned the term nutrition misinformation, which is a specific field of study within being a dietitian. Why did you decide to pursue that?
I have both personal and professional reasons. Personally, I have fallen prey to nutrition misinformation. There was a period of time in my life where I listened to people that were not appropriately educated. I implemented their dodgy advice and I harmed my health. Having firsthand experience of how nutrition misinformation can affect my body and my health is definitely something that has made me very passionate about trying to do something about nutrition misinformation and to also safeguard others. On a professional note, I work as a registered dietitian and I work with people who have disordered eating, and I also provide nutrition support to people in eating disorder recovery. A lot of these people are actually looking at social media and believing in nutrition misinformation that is fueling their disordered eating and their faulty nutrition beliefs. Also, on a professional note, I spend time on social media when I can, correcting nutrition misinformation that I've noticed isn't being removed or fact-checked, even when reported as false. So that indicates to me that social media companies aren't taking nutrition misinformation on social media seriously. So I feel compelled to conduct research to plug some gaps in the literature. It's a fairly new area in the academic literature to explore. And also, I would like to bring some more attention to nutrition misinformation and the seriousness of it.
You made a fantastic carousel of all of the claims about seed oils being toxic. I love that one, for example.
Yes, seed oils. It will not die. The misinformation around seed oils just will not die. I don't understand.
It's even getting worse here in America, at least. But you mentioned, well, I brought up seed oils. You mentioned supplements earlier, which is my pet peeve because of the amount of money that people waste and the ease of monetization. But what are some of the most egregious examples of nutrition misinformation that you've viewed online?
How long is this podcast, Derek? Do we have several hours?
We have a full day. We have 24 hours.
I won't do that to you. So if I had to pick the most egregious, I would say it sounds quite unsexy, but I would say content that demonizes food and ingredients is pretty egregious because it can cause people to make unnecessary dietary changes, set them up for nutrient deficiencies. It can cause a lot of fear around foods. The content that I find particularly egregious is the type that label and use all of the wellness buzzwords, those really scary wellness buzzwords like toxic and inflammatory and poison. Food isn't inherently toxic. It's not poison. It isn't unhealthy or inflammatory. It's important here that we look at the dose consumed, and we have regulatory bodies in every country monitoring the safety of our ingredients and food. Part of their goal is to protect public health.
You said something there. Food is not inherently toxic or poisonous. I see that all the time. But you also said inflammatory. And one of the big claims of functional doctors and nutritionists, for example, who don't have to actually be dietitians, they constantly talk about inflammation. So can you unpack that a little bit?
Sure. So inflammation is a buzzword. So I first would like to caution anyone that comes across content that uses the word inflammation and food in the same sentence to be really wary, because inflammation is a really complex system in the body. It's not as simple as you eat something and it causes inflammation. It just doesn't work like that, especially when it comes to foods and ingredients. in a well-balanced dietary pattern, it is virtually impossible for a food or an ingredient to cause inflammation if they're eaten in moderate amounts. Now, the caveat there are people that have food, legitimate medically diagnosed food allergies or intolerances or medical conditions that warrant the reduction or elimination of specific foods. People that live with celiac disease have to reduce gluten because gluten can cause problems in their gut lining. So there are a specific subset of the population that have to look at specific foods and ingredients to reduce in their diet. But for everybody else, inflammation doesn't just happen with eating a food or ingredient. Inflammation is a complex system, a series of events in the body that happen when there is a threat to the body.
Thank you for all this information. We've talked about the dangers of misinformation this entire time, but for the last question, what are some resources you suggest for people to find credible information?
Well, look, the best resource that people can access to learn about nutrition and food that's tailored to their health needs and their dietary needs is to actually see a registered dietitian and consult one-on-one. That is the best, most effective, safest way to learn about nutrition and also to receive recommendations if you need recommendations or if you have any specific goals. Talking and consulting with a registered dietitian is the best resource. I understand that that's not available for everybody. So the next best thing is to look for general scientific consensus, which means, and that's not about a bunch of people in a room all deciding that we're going to say this and that's what it is. It's scientific consensus is about the totality of evidence, the latest, highest quality, best available evidence, and agreeing that that's where we're at. This is where the science is at with this food or this particular nutrition topic. So the next best resource that people can access online are government approved websites. So these are websites that display the scientific consensus, which is what you want to see when trying to make a decision about food or health. And so government websites are like the NHS, the CDC, the USDA, and the FDA. So the most credible form of evidence is research. So scientific literature, which we can all find online. It's very, very easy to find a scientific paper about a wide range of food and nutrition topics. But the issue there is it's one thing to search for and find that paper, but it's an entirely different thing to critically assess it. And it takes years of training. It took me 5 years total to become a degree qualified nutritionist and a degree qualified dietitian. And still I work on professional development to make sure I stay abreast of how to critically analyze research appropriately. And that means looking at the study's methods, looking at the study's results, and trying to make a decision of whether that's applicable to the client in front of me or the community of people I'm working with. The next best thing is to actually follow registered dietitians online who often take a paper and critically assess it and share its findings in really easy to understand terminology. And not just following one registered dietitian, but following a group of registered dietitians, several, because we should all be saying the same things. We should all be on the same page. So that is probably the greatest forms of resources online.